Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the March 10, 2019 session, focusing on Deuteronomy 26, verses 1 through 11, Land and Liturgy. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
And I'm Crystal Shepherd.
Well, good evening, everyone. We are really excited to have David Adams with us tonight. David's been with us before. He is the editor for the Faith Element Resources. So if your small group is using those on Sunday mornings or Wednesday nights or whenever you meet, you can thank David for the good work that happens there. David is with us in part because Bert is alive.
We are all grateful.
Yes. We are very grateful. So I got a call literally like 20 minutes before we were to start recording. Mm-hmm. And Bert, I could tell on the phone that he was shook up. And he said, man, he said, you wouldn't believe what just happened. He said, we were in the house. I was getting ready for the podcast. And there was all this shaking. And there was this loud boom and a crash. And a giant tree just fell on their house. Mm-hmm. And he said it just missed him by a few feet. So we are very grateful that Bert is okay. Yes. Sorry about his house, but
right.
But that can be repaired. Mm-hmm. So Bert, we hope that the repair goes well, and we will look forward to hearing from you again next time. We may have to get Bert in a safe location for the next
recording. Yes.
This is the first Sunday of Lent.
Mm-hmm. Can you believe it? It came late this year.
Yeah. Although I just can't believe how fast the year's going by anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that each of you have a meaningful Lent. It is a season of introspection, of considering our humanity. And we will begin this season, at least on Faith Element, with a text out of the Old Testament from Deuteronomy. So, Crystal, could you help us get started?
Yes. The sun slowly slips below the horizon, casting a golden glow on the land. The two stand silently, heads bowed, hands knit together. At the man's side, the instrument of toil stuck deep into the ground. The small wooden wheelbarrow sits silently behind the woman. In the distance, a cross stands tall on the horizon. Church bells tolling, calling for the farmers to quit their toil for evening prayer. At the feet of the silent couple are two woven baskets, sparely packed with food from the ground, first fruits. In his 1857 painting, The Angelus, Jean-Francois Millet painted the peasants of his day, pausing in their work to give thanks and to offer back to God what they had been given. I grew up with a home interior reproduction of my painting on the wall of our kitchen table. It reminded me to be thankful for what God had given. It wasn't until I studied the painting with my kids this year that I gained a deeper understanding and appreciation of what Millet captured. God had given them life and sustenance, and for that, these peasants were grateful. For me, I see Millet capturing a more modern glimpse of today's scripture. The rhythm of life set in motion by God and the rhythm of the farm and cultivating the land is carried out by the farmer. That rhythm is the liturgy of their lives. They bend to farm the land, toil with their hands, eat, sleep, and bow in reverence for their God, and they give. This return to God of gifts God has given, which could be seen in the Bible as sacrifice, expresses and reinforces the bonds between the participants. It reminds us that God will always be there for his faithful and that God will continue to care for them. The recognition becomes apparent. Everything is a gift. Looking at today's passage, Esther Men says, according to Jewish tradition, first fruits offerings were made of seven species native to the land: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. This specificity may encourage us to locate ourselves within our own particular context today, giving thanks and offering what we have been uniquely given by God for the prospering of our neighbors and the larger community. It makes me question, what have we been given? It may be a simplification to say money or resources. And while I do believe those are necessary to give back to God and help others, we may have other things to give. We all have differing talents and abilities. My husband works on people's teeth all day long. God bless him, because I wouldn't want to. He has volunteered time to help those who cannot afford dental care. I couldn't do that, but I can be a compassionate listener. God has listened to my cries and has helped me through pain, so I can in turn give that first fruit back and do that for others. On a grander scale, though, when I think about the example of the Israelites, I think about how they were led out of bondage by God through the difficulty of the wilderness to inherit a land. Even when that land was taken away, they continued to worship and to trust God with their very lives, and the Jewish people do so to this day. If I follow their example, then all that I have, the very breath and life, is given of God. How do we give that life back? I was also given love, manifest in the person of Jesus. Jesus' entire existence was a gift to God. He loved without question and worked for healing and wholeness. May our lives be lived in such a way that we do this, by standing with those who have been trampled underfoot and denied basic rights and justice, by seeing our own implicit biases in ways we are complicit in the pain of others, by seeing the other, whether it is the person lying next to us in bed or the stranger we meet living in the liturgy of our lives. In it all, I believe we worship and we give of ourselves out of our very existence to the God who has given us life and breath and meaning. Amen.
I love that phrase. Where do you find the liturgy of life?
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, you're right. It makes all kind of sense with an agricultural culture, but that's not, you know, I mean, okay. So I know the academic year and that guides so much of what's next and what season it is. It's the spring semester right now. But I think what you bring up makes a lot of sense, because there is a liturgy to our lives. And if we see the beauty and the rhythm of our lives as gifts from God and look for places to offer back in gratitude, I mean, that's at least some part of what we're seeing in this passage, right?
Mm-hmm. When I think, you know, the reason why the painting came to mind is this idea of, you know, when you think of the agricultural life, there is this rhythm. But even in that painting, there was the rhythm too of, they probably would stop when the church bells would toll and pray. And so I just think like there's this rhythm there, even in the midst of their work, they're still offering prayer to God. They're still, you know, connecting with God in that way. And so I think there's such a rhythm there. Like you said, I think if we really pay attention to our own lives, we find those rhythms. We find these things that happen every day. I get up every morning and I read. You know, I go and I fix my morning coffee, and, you know, I sit with the coffee and I read, or whatever it is. We all have those kind of rhythms. And the question becomes, like, where is God in that rhythm? And what part of that are we giving back?
I don't know that we really like to do that very much. I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but it seems like, especially in life of religious folk, that we get so caught up in, oh, I'm doing this liturgy that gives thanks. And we're thinking about the liturgy and how we've done this so many times and we're doing it again this week. We never stopped and looked back and say, well, why? What did we do? What has happened? Where have we tracked God in our lives? I think we lose count of that. And there are reasons behind this, but, you know, sometimes, for instance, you look at churches and how many of them know much about the Christian year? And we talk about the seasons of the year and the things we know. How many people know what colors are existing in the church years as they observe the passing of the year and why those colors are being used? Or now we're just entering in the season of Lent, but how many people know what that season is and why we have such a season? To some degree, I think we've gotten so caught up in the liturgy that we have, an event that's happening right now, that we haven't given God credit for the events that got us here and the things that we're trying to remember. And so we have a day, and it's just like the day before. You know, we don't have a day anymore. That was yesterday. But did we ever stop and think about that and appreciate the day that we had? I think we're really resistant to doing that. And sometimes we need to be reminded that we need to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of the purpose of liturgy, right? Because when we understand where it comes from and why we have the different forms that we have, it calls to mind those events of God's actions in our lives and in the lives of the people who came before us. So every time that we observe the Lord's Supper or communion or whatever it is you call it with our community, we are reminded of the night that Jesus was betrayed. I think that that's what liturgy can help us do. I think that's kind of what it's doing in this text, because in the text for today, we've got this passage where the priests tell those who are bringing the first fruits, this is what you will say. So there is a recitation of this story of the way God has acted in their lives. And so each time that they bring that first fruits, they give thanks for that land and the land as a gift and demonstration of covenant with God.
Yes, it's a really good memory device. I guess what I'm complaining about, maybe complaining, is we have taken the memory device and we've focused too much on the device and not the things that we're remembering.
Mm.
And sometimes I wonder, here's a metaphor, I guess, that is appropriate right now. Sometimes I look at God as a basketball referee. Think about when you watch a basketball game, how many plays occur, how many times the ball shifted hands and people scored. And the only thing you remember about the referees really is if they made a bad call, we remember that. We complain about it the whole time. We never stop and say, oh, there are 300 things they did right. We should celebrate those. You know, and I think we treat God that way. There are thousands of things that might go right every second in our lives where God is caring for us and there for us and doing things. And all we seem to do is talk about those places where, well, God didn't quite come through for me this time, like I expected God to do. So let's complain about that. And oh, if we're going to have a litany or something to remember God, now I'm doing that thing again and it's lost meaning for me because I've started thinking about that instead of the things that it was created to help me remember. And I think that in a way, we need to develop a Christian practice that allows us to see it all the time and be always thankful, like what Crystal was talking about earlier, and looking at a rhythm of the day and reviewing the things that happened that day and that a part of our normal practice. I like liturgy just fine, but I think that sometimes people use it to dodge really doing the memories they need to do.
So like doing rather than being.
Yes.
I guess something that for me, part of this passage is almost an antidote to a mindset that I think is common in our culture. We look at farmers. It's just as easy to look. I mean, if you want to take an agricultural kind of habit and talk about the work that goes into tilling the land and planting food and caring for the plants until they produce and then harvesting. And then, I mean, there is a lot of hard work in raising fruit or any of dates or pomegranates or any of the items you listed. And so it'd be so easy to go, well, you know, we've got all these because I was out there working. I got all this done. Look at all this.
Right.
But I mean, the fact that this text, there is this pattern that's set up that is a reminder, you know, we do work hard, but doggone it, it's not ours. Mm-hmm. This is a gift that was given to us and we got to participate in it. And therefore we in gratitude give back and we remember. I mean, but I think we lose that gratitude sometimes when we so focus on the hard work we've done.
In a way, you just described the plot of the movie Shenandoah.
Really?
You remember the movie Shenandoah? You ever watch Shenandoah? You all watch Shenandoah?
No.
It's a little more era film, but it is a family that lives on a farm in the South. And they begin it by every night when they go to pray for that day, Jimmy Stewart goes to God and says, hey, God, we did all the work. We planned the harvest, we created, we did all this, but thanks anyway. But bad things happen. because of the war, and they go through terrible things in their life, and they get hurt in many ways. By the end of the movie, he understands, and he's thanking God for God's provision by the end of the movie. But they have to go through so much to recognize that God was with them the whole time, and they didn't just earn this themselves, that God gifted them with the ability to have those things. So it's everyone watched the movie because, oh, it's a Civil War movie, but that's not what it's about. It's about coming to recognize that God has been in their life helping them all along, and they never recognize it because they're too caught up in their doing all the time. Oh, we did all of this. So it's a fascinating movie for giving you that subplot in there and really driving it home in a way that just saying it wouldn't have done. I had to have a cultural reference someplace. I know it's
old. Hey, you're channeling no, Bert.
Somebody needs to.
Yes.
It makes me wonder if this is a common human problem that has always existed, or if the ways that our culture has sped up and moved into a 24/7 kind of society and instant everything and no, I can't grow my own food, but I can have it delivered to my house without any idea of where it came from. Do we have a responsibility to, or is it a bigger challenge to connect with those rhythms? Or are we even further removed from being able to see that it's not our work, but God's?
It may well be. Right. Well, these things just show up. Think of your life as a child. You know, many children have parents who care for them and provide all these things for them, but they don't really know what their parent does at their job or what goes on during the day, things on the table. They just know that they're taking care of them, which is really all we know about God. If we don't know, we just know that God's taking care of us. You know, but we are separate from that activity of helping put those things there. We haven't gone through the thing of being a wandering Aramaean for our ancestor who went through all this and brought us out of Egypt eventually and got us this land. We don't know that. We've always known plenty. Mm-hmm. So it's harder for us to know and appreciate it as much. I guess this is where our white privilege isn't helping us tonight, because we haven't really known what it's like to be an oppressed people closer to suffering and needing and not knowing where it's going to come from.
I think you make a great, great point there. I mean, in much of the world still, there is food insecurity. Mm-hmm. And people do celebrate when they have food and wonder where that next meal comes from. And there is a particular gratitude that comes from the harvest or from having food provided. And we're still talking about food, even though we know this could be a larger dynamic. But I think the point remains that you're right, that our privilege, our place in the world right now, for many of us, you know, we struggle to understand the true gratitude of many of the things that we take for granted every day. But I wanted to talk a minute about what Nikki brought up. I do think that our technology, while it does allow us to find new ways to connect, it also creates a greater ability to have this distance between things, so that, like you say, you don't know who or where your food was grown and came in. Right. And that's the truth for so much of what we consume or participate in our lives. Things are very segmented and almost siloed in many ways. And I think that's something to think about, because is part of a healthy perspective on life in the world to see the connections and value them.
And possibly, this particular tension that we're talking about may have been introduced through this passage. I mean, we're talking about how we've been to the lectionary and what we've covered. This is a good time for this to come up, because you know, as we're observing the Lenten season, we're talking about the sacrifices Christ has made for us and what happened and what leads up to the passion and all these things. What's a good time to start thinking about that now going in, as opposed to coming to the end of it and saying, oh, what a great ride we had through this. Jesus kind of suffered, but now it's over because it's Easter. And we didn't notice it again this year. We just kind of took it for granted and let it go.
Well, and I think too, like even the, you know, in Lent, we talk about, you know, giving something up. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how Like we can, you mentioned in the movie, they thought that they had done all the work and God was, you know, yeah, you're there, but you know, we've done all the work. When Lent, we give up, we do this, we do this. And I know it's about introspection, but maybe like you said, thinking about what Christ has done and focusing on that in the beginning and not so much about what we have done, but what Christ has done in us and what Christ is doing in us. I don't know if that's making any sense. I'm externally processing, but I think there's something to that because, you know, people will say, what did you give up for Lent? What do you do? Oh, I'm giving up meat. I'm giving up chocolate. I'm giving up whatever. I'm not going to watch Game of Thrones or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I gave up TV one Lent. That was fun. Had a lot of episodes to binge watch. But, you know, it's that whole idea that we are somehow doing something. And I know that we do participate with God, but I think sometimes we think that, oh, look at me, I'm doing all this holy stuff. Kind of, I think maybe a little bit of what you were talking about, David, about focusing so much on the what we're doing instead of actually being and focusing on who we have our being through. So I just am thinking about what, when we talk about the disconnection that we have in our modern culture, maybe in Lent, that's part of what we look at this year is how can we connect and how are we connected?
Yeah.
And that's in a lot of different ways. I mean, it doesn't just have to be about our food, but how are we connected in other ways? And maybe focusing on that. And if you want to give up chocolate too, you can, but.
Well, I think also that I have, as you were talking about the giving up, my brain kind of went in a little bit of a different direction. Like I think we did we both kind of are coming in on this idea of what we give up for Lent from two different directions. But we were talking earlier also about how plenty, when we grow up with plenty and we don't live with food insecurity and those, whatever it is, that it makes it a little more difficult for us to connect to what the actual source of our food are, the gifts that are in our lives, what that source is. And so we talked a little bit about how when we come from places of privilege, that's more difficult to connect to. And it got my brain wondering, is there a way for people of privilege to figure out just to use Lent, to use giving things up, to go without? Is there a way to learn the lessons that come with that, or to at least reflect on what it means to have lived with plenty and what that keeps us from understanding at a deeper level?
But I think we all have those places of need. Mm-hmm. And while I may not need food, I may not, you know, I don't need warm shelter. I'm fortunate I have these things, but I have other needs. And I think for us to be willing to reflect on those places where we truly have need and our dependence upon God for them. I don't know. It just feels like this passage is full of an awareness of how things are interconnected, but also of the gratitude that we owe for the life we have.
When you said that, I was thinking about this. There's an author, Anne Voskamp, and she has a book about 1,000 gifts. And she started kind of going through and listing the gifts that God had given. And it, you know, it could have been the smile she received from a person on the street or whatever. And I kind of think that, you know, when you say about seeing how God, you know, meets our needs and what our areas of needs are, I think that's another thing to maybe consider this Lent is maybe keeping track of the things that we notice during our day, like kind of recounting of the day, kind of like David said, but, you know, keep kind of like something that we can look back on like this scripture does and says, hey, like, this is what God has done. Because sometimes I think in the busyness of our lives, we don't take the time to reflect and we don't take the time to truly see. And so by keeping a record of that somehow, you know, whether it's written or on your smartphone or whatever, you are able to look back and go, oh, there was God. There was that thread there of how God met my needs and how God was present.
Well, however you enter this Lenten season, I pray that it will be a time of looking within, but also of enormous gratitude. We are all graced with so much. We are graced with the time and place in which we're born, and the people we're born into as family and friends, those who love us and support us. There is so much that is out of our hands and that our gracious God deserves credit for. May we find our own ways to give back the first fruits of our plenty, of our bounty. And may it help our faith grow stronger. Thank you for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.